Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. During a hearing last week, 57-year-old Robert Louis Deer, the man accused of killing three people inside a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado, said, quote, "I am a warrior for the babies," end quote. When he was initially apprehended, Deer also allegedly said, quote, "No more baby parts," end quote. Armed with an assault-style rifle, the suspect killed two civilians and one police officer and injured nine others. The November 27th attack followed months of media coverage of heavily edited videos suggesting Planned Parenthood profited from selling fetus tissue for medical research, although most of the coverage failed to report that the videos were heavily edited, produced by the anti-abortion group the Center for Medical Progress. The videos led to congressional hearings and calls for defunding Planned Parenthood. Republican candidates used the videos to further attack the organization. During the second Republican presidential debate, Carly Fiorina said the tape showed a fully formed fetus on the table with its heart beating, while someone says, "We have to keep it alive to harvest its brain." But that's not true. The video she described does not exist. Several candidates have repeated the false claim that Planned Parenthood sells body parts. Meantime, a growing list of federal and state investigations have cleared Planned Parenthood of any wrongdoing, but reporting on the outcomes has been minimal at best. After Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards was called to testify in front of House Republicans in September, the FBI warned of increased attacks. Since the release of the videos, harassment, threats, and attacks have increased across the country. This is according to the National Abortion Federation. Joining me to talk about the damaging effects of anti-abortion rhetoric and anti-abortion laws are two guests. Jody Jacobson is president and editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. It's a daily publication providing news and analysis on sexual and reproductive health and justice issues. And Jody joins us on the line from Washington. Hi, Jody. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. So glad to be on with you guys.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Amanda Kifferly, Director of Patient Advocacy for the Women's Centers, an affiliate of independent abortion centers in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. The Women's Center provides abortion care to women throughout the country, and Amanda joins us on the line from New Jersey. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose, and hello, Jody.
Hi, Amanda.
Good morning. So I want to start off by talking about what happened in Colorado, because as expected, the horrible tragedy in San Bernardino has gotten a lot more attention and has overshadowed what happened in Colorado. The Republicans had a debate two nights ago, and it was all about ISIS and San Bernardino. The shooting in Colorado didn't get mentioned once. And when it happened, Dan Loggins, executive VP of Planned Parenthood, said in a statement, quote, "One of the lessons of this awful tragedy is that words matter, and hateful rhetoric fuels violence. It's not enough to denounce the tragedy without also denouncing the poisonous rhetoric that fueled it," end quote. Jody, let's start off with you. What were your thoughts after that happened, and what do you think about what Don said?
Well, Don said, ironically, or perhaps not ironically, Don said exactly what Ted Cruz himself had said, which is that words have consequences and words matter. The difference is that Ted Cruz was using that phraseology to make an unsupported claim against President Obama, but really, in a sense, was speaking to himself, because he also runs around exploiting these false claims against Planned Parenthood for his own political benefit. So I think Don is absolutely right on. Words have consequences in an environment in which healthcare providers are constantly stigmatized, made out to be murderers, made out to be wrongdoers, and in which anything goes, really. I mean, and when I say anything goes, it's become okay for an organization that, you know, really didn't exist in anybody's mind a year and a half ago to create out of whole cloth videos making charges that cannot be substantiated anywhere, even though we've spent tens of thousands of dollars investigating these non-charges, and yet, despite their being discredited, are still used by presidential candidates. That creates an environment in which people, whether they're unstable or not, do things that are violent. And the people that perpetuate that language are responsible for that violence.
And we'll talk about those videos in just a minute. But Amanda, what are your thoughts about the connections between the rhetoric that we're hearing and the increase in violence and attacks across the country?
Well, we know as providers who are working in different communities throughout the U.S. that there has been a dramatic increase in the hate speech, the threats, and the violence against us. So we're seeing it firsthand, you know, as providers. We're seeing our patients asking different questions. We're seeing our patients being vilified. And we're being asked about it. So we know that this is really happening. And like Jody said, certainly we know that when we see mainstream folks talking about this, that there's no doubt that it's going to be acted on by people who hear it as a call, as a response to ending abortion, that they feel that the violence is what's going to have to do it if they're not being successful by making abortion outlawed through the Supreme Court or through other legal means.
And Vicky Saporta, the president and chief executive of the National Abortion Federation, said that the San Bernardino shooting had most definitely derailed the conversation about violence and threats directed at abortion clinics. She said this in an interview with the New York Times. Fresh Air just aired a conversation about the increase in attacks and rhetoric and, you know, attacks against clinics and providers. And so what we want to do is talk about why that's happening, but also further the conversation to talk about how laws are also affecting women. So let's spend some time talking about these videos that were released and the role the media played in giving them so much attention. And what really struck me, Amanda, over the summer when these videos got just a lot of attention, it was very rare to hear the media say that they were highly edited. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think it did take some time, and I think everyone wanted to get a minute to absorb the videos, and we were all sort of offended by it, and we also felt a sense of wanting to be private and secure ourselves. You know, the videos were taken during professional meetings in what we thought were very highly secure areas where we were learning and working out ways to further the work that we do and increase the options that we have for patients. So to see those videos manipulated in such a hurtful way was, I think, personally offensive and then professionally offensive. And then it was hard to articulate to the media what was going on there. Also because we know what happened directly after that. Certainly the physicians and the professionals who were on that video were directly targeted. They needed immediate police escorts. Most of the folks who were on those videos needed to go into some type of hiding. So there was concern to speak out on what we were seeing, knowing that the practices that we have in our offices, although I'm not associated with Planned Parenthood, we knew that they weren't true. And we also know the long history of what anti-abortion opponents have done, which was to falsify information, to make outlandish comments. And I don't think it's so far, you know, we've seen them before say that abortion causes breast cancer. You know, so we knew that that's what this was born from, and that there was very little truth, if anything, in those videos. And that was hard to articulate, I think, to the media. And once it was discovered, I think that, you know, we were glad to see it being discussed in truthful light.
And Jody, what are your thoughts about the role the media played in talking about the videos over and over again without mentioning that they were highly edited?
Well, I think by and large, the media has been grossly irresponsible about these videos. First of all, they weren't just highly edited, they were deceptively edited. Mm-hmm. You know, something can be highly edited to make it shorter or what have you. These were completely deceptively edited. That's the first thing. The second thing is, what mainstream media organization, and apparently my answer to that is many of them, takes videos from a little-known and, you know, not at all legitimated organization and just completely announces the findings of said organization without even asking itself, where did these videos come from? Can I verify that even the timestamps on the videos match? Which, as a very small nonprofit, media organization, we immediately saw these timestamps don't match. So we immediately knew something was wrong. Even, you know, even though we have a commitment to evidence-based reporting, and were there any wrongdoing to be found, we would have reported that. The question becomes, who are these people? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what is legitimate about their claims? And there was no question there. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you had these almost laudatory interviews with David Daleiden, the head of CMP, on the cover of the Washington Post and elsewhere. And, you know, it really struck me that for all the times that anti-choice rhetoric and claims, let's say about abortion and breast cancer or abortion and depression, all of these claims that are constantly found to be completely made up, are never reported when they're found to be completely made up on things like the front page of the Washington Post and the New York Times, yet they put this guy out there almost lauding him for doing what he did. And I found that grossly irresponsible. We've now had 12 states investigate Planned Parenthood. Let's remember that in only two states does Planned Parenthood do fetal tissue donation. So 12 states investigated Planned Parenthood for fetal tissue donation where it doesn't even happen. Great use of taxpayer resources. And this was all planned because even some of the people on the House committee who called the hearings against Planned Parenthood had already seen these videos. So you have deceptively edited videos that the media did not fact check whatsoever, went on for weeks reporting about them as though it were he said, she said contest. Planned Parenthood says they don't, these people say they do, and then they don't report that 12 states have found nothing or that the House Republicans can't even come up with an actual fact to produce in their hearings. It's just a farce.
So 12 states investigated Planned Parenthood's alleged mishandling of fetal remains, and they found absolutely no wrongdoing.
Absolutely no wrongdoing. And like I say, it would be hard to understand why some of those states did so, because they already knew there was no fetal tissue donation going on in clinics in their state. I believe one state did some investigation where Planned Parenthood doesn't even provide abortions in that state. So it's just, you know, we have a witch hunt, and any kind of thing that they can hang their hat on for a witch hunt is a viable use of time, apparently. And, you know, you saw Planned Parenthood clinics in Texas literally raided by the police to find what? I don't know. But, again, it's a police state of healthcare is what it is. Because on one hand, you've got people who are literally, you know, stigmatizing and threatening in indirect ways people outside of clinics when they're trying to get healthcare. And then you've got healthcare providers who are living under the threat of false investigation, invasion of their clinics, and so forth, without any expectation of fair treatment by the law. And then on top of that, you've got the media, which is parroting these claims over and over and over again without ever investigating them. And as a media person, I take very seriously our responsibility to vet facts before we report them. I don't find that responsibility to be widely held any longer.
Well, and then after these federal and state investigations found no wrongdoing, there was very little media coverage of that. You would have thought that after so much attention on those videos, the media would come back and say, well, look, they investigated Planned Parenthood and 12 states found nothing. But I rarely saw that reported.
Precisely. I mean, Karen Tumulty, even recently, Karen Tumulty in the Washington Post, I noted in an article she wrote that she had a paragraph in which she basically said, you know, CMP said this, Planned Parenthood said they don't. And I thought, okay, now we've had all of the investigations, we've had the circus of the Planned Parenthood hearings, which didn't even address, you know, tissue donation because there was nothing to address. And we've had all of these other things, and yet she's still portraying it as though or he said, she said. Mm-hmm. And that is the problem, is that the media is not taking any responsibility either for vetting facts before they're reported or after they are reported and verified, ensuring that that reporting is integrated into their own reporting.
Jody Jacobson is president and editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a daily publication providing analysis on sexual and reproductive health and justice issues. Amanda Kifferly is director of patient advocacy for the Women's Centers. It's an affiliate of independent abortion centers in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And if you'd like to join us, if you listen to Fresh Air, they had a conversation about the increase in attacks against clinics, providers, their families, in some cases their elderly parents who live far away from them. And we're talking about why this is happening, the role that the media has played in giving so much coverage to these highly, and as Jody says, deceptively edited videos, but then not reporting on the fact that 12 states found no wrongdoing against Planned Parenthood. So what questions do you have about that? And what are your thoughts about just how the media should report on these stories? Also, we're going to talk about how laws are affecting women on the ground. Up to 240,000 women have tried to give themselves abortions in Texas. Up to 240,000, where so many clinics have shut down. We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What do you think about the argument that words have consequences? So, Amanda, what are your thoughts about this? I mean, even though investigations have found no wrongdoing, you're still hearing Republican candidates repeating the false claim that Planned Parenthood sells body parts. And those of us who watch the second Republican debate, I mean, I was watching Carly Fiorina wondering, where is she getting this information and who's going to call her out on this? When she said she saw in the video, a fully formed fetus on the table with its heart beating while someone says we have to keep it alive. I mean, that doesn't exist.
That's right. And I think that, as Jody so eloquently said, is that we've got to get back to a place where we start doing better fact-checking. And once those facts have been established, to call out the times in the past where these claims have been false and proven such, and we need to give it as much attention as we had given the original controversy. And, you know, I think what needs to be said is that for providers who do engage in tissue donation, it is at the request of the patients we serve. And we are members of the healthcare community, you know, so I am there each day to make sure that the needs of our patients and our communities are being met. We strive every day to listen to the voices of our patients. And when patients want to participate in something as vital as tissue donation, I think that it's a request that can be met and should be met with dignity and with compassion, and not something that should be discussed falsely the way that candidates are doing, or grossly discussed the way that they are, with medical inaccuracies and words that we know are inflammatory and work to incite people who want to act in violent ways, rather than speak for the patients who are asking for this service to be done because it's something that they feel compelled to do in the interest of learning in science and also of healing.
Jody, how do you think these claims by candidates should be dealt with?
You know, I don't have an easy answer to that because I think our political environment has become so rife with just outright lies that it's hard to keep track of them. I do think, again, it's the responsibility of the media to consistently and in a timely manner fact-check these folks and press them. You know, Carly Fiorina is just one example. I mean, I've begun to think that perhaps she's, you know, there's some psychological problem there because the woman just continues to repeat what are outright disproven lies, and yet I don't see her being called out regularly on that. On the other hand, there are so many lies that are being touted by presidential candidates that it seems, you know, the whole thing about thousands of Muslims celebrating in the streets of New Jersey, I mean, it's just, it seems to be an ethic of the GOP on the far right that no matter how outlandish they are, that they can continue to be even more outlandish. And it's a problem that there's a part of the population that apparently doesn't care. I'm not sure I have an easy answer. I know that it's my job as a media person to continue to press forward with facts and accountability of, you know, politicians. I don't care if they are Democrats, Republicans, independents, or whomever. I think the rest of the media has a very, very fulfilled responsibility in that area.
Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. Amanda Kifferly is director of patient advocacy for the Women's Centers, an affiliate of providers in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And let's hear from Bert in Berkeley. Hi, Bert. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I teach journalism at Laney College in Oakland, and I'm really outraged by the fact, really ashamed of the media, and it's mainly the mainstream media. First thing I tell my students in a class called Mass Media and Society that the word media is plural, and there are lots, and I always talk to them about critical thinking and about alternative media. And, you know, one thing I heard this morning on the radio that Sheldon Adelson, the man who met with Donald Trump, that he has bought the paper in Las Vegas, Review Sun, I think it's called. And it's just the mainstream media that, as you say, gave a lot of reporting to the issue when those films, the doctored films, came out, but did very little to talk about the fact that they were doctored, they were not accurate. And I think this is the mainstream media, and citizens really have to go to other places, alternative media, to really get a better picture of what's going on in our society.
Well, thank you. And just to give listeners information on this, so Sheldon Adelson is a billionaire casino mogul, and the Republican debate was held at his casino two nights ago. A lot of people have been wondering who bought the Las Vegas Review-Journal. It's Nevada's largest daily newspaper, and Sheldon Adelson, his family confirmed that they have bought it for $140 million. So maybe we can bring that up on Friday's roundtable, because that's definitely a media question. Thank you for calling in, Bert. Let's go next to Roger in Fremont. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I had just a comment about the media, and that is, having done a graduate paper on McCarthyism, this is a very standard practice where you have a charge that makes the front page. If there is any response to it, the response or the truth comes out on page 8 or page 10, by which time a new charge has come on the front page. And I think your previous caller is very legitimate, because the press doesn't spend anywhere near the amount of time reporting the truth in the same prominent fashion that they report the speculated charges. And, of course, I'm not even talking about Fox News, which I'm never going to expect to see anything. But that's just my comment, that this is an ongoing thing that I've known for at least 70-plus years. Again, if charges being made unsupported, and if they're corrected so late that the damage is done.
Mm. Well, thank you. And after Robert Deere, the alleged 57-year-old shooter, said, "I am a warrior for the babies and no more baby parts," Fox spent just 30 seconds covering those statements. CNN spent less than 3 minutes, and MSNBC spent about 21 minutes. That's according to Media Matters. Today, we are talking about anti-choice rhetoric, and we're going to talk also about anti-choice laws and how they affect the safety of providers and women. What are your thoughts about the fact that words have consequences? We're talking about this with Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, and Amanda Kifferly, director of patient advocacy for the Women's Centers. They are providers in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW, local public radio. To join in today's conversation, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-TALK. If you'd prefer to write your question or comment, the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11, World Have Your Say on today's program. Holland, who've taken in record numbers of asylum seekers this year, they're afraid the national mood may be turning against them. We'll hear both pro- and anti-migrant voices. Also from Turkey, crackdowns. Are you talking about Turks or talking about tanks on the streets of several Kurdish towns as the government moves in force against the banned PKK Kurdish group? These stories and more coming up on World Have Your Say at 11 o'clock.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will be discussing coverage of the economy and the Fed's decision to raise interest rates. We'll also talk about the $1.1 trillion budget deal, which includes $650 billion in tax cuts. The 20 wealthiest Americans, according to a new report, own more wealth than the bottom half of the population. So how are the media reporting on rising inequality? Today, we are talking about how anti-abortion rhetoric and anti-abortion laws are affecting the safety of providers and women across the country. You may have heard Fresh Air this morning. Terry Gross had a conversation about violence and attacks against providers. We're talking about why that is happening, the media's role in all of this, and what about the fact that words have consequences? How do you think the media should report, for example, on these highly edited videos that got so much attention? And then when 12 state investigations cleared Planned Parenthood of any wrongdoing, there was barely any coverage. So what are your thoughts about that? What are your thoughts about the violence against clinics and how these issues should be reported in the media? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a publication providing analysis on reproductive health and justice issues. Amanda Kifferly is director of patient advocacy for the Women's Centers. It's an affiliate of abortion providers in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And Amanda, after the videos were released, the FBI basically warned that attacks would increase, and they were right. Shortly after the FBI came out with that announcement, there was a clinic in California that was firebombed. What are you hearing from your clinics in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania?
Well, I work out of the most of those clinics so routinely that I hear firsthand from patients. And what patients want to know is, can I get an appointment? You know, patients want to know, is your door going to be open tomorrow, and how much is the cost of my procedure? So what I'm hearing from patients is a desire to be seen, a desire to access health care, and to not have any further delays on their care. And I think, you know, I'm so glad when it gets any media attention. What's a shame is that I'm not sure do all listeners or do all Americans understand that every day there is a hostile environment outside of our clinics when, you know, we have people show up every day outside of these offices and offer, you know, what they call sidewalk counseling, which is in no way counseling. It is no way done with kindness or compassion or with interest for our patient care. In fact, it just adds to the hostile nature that we're seeing. And we are in direct communication with the FBI. That's part of what our job entails. And, you know, I think the FBI knew that because we told them that. We said to them, this is reminiscent of the past. We've seen this before. We saw this with Dr. George Tiller's murder. We knew that violence was in the air and that you could feel it rising. So what I hear most, you know, is our patients wanting to be seen? I hear my staff asking questions. I hear the family of staff asking questions. And, you know, on a daily basis, part of my job is to work with the FBI on this. So we've seen this on a daily basis, and we've embraced it as part of the work that we do. But I also want to remind folks that this is what happens outside of our offices every day, and that laws really should be enacted to get these people off of the front of our buildings away so that we can deliver peaceful health care and do what we go to do every day at our jobs.
And Jody, what are your thoughts about this, and how unique is this around the globe? I was struck by a recent visit by three members of the UN Human Rights Commission, and they were shocked at what they found in front of an abortion clinic in Alabama. Francis Rede, the delegate from the United Kingdom, said, "We were harassed. There were two men waiting to insult us. They were screaming, 'You're murdering children.'" Eleonora Zielinska, a delegate from Poland, said, "It's kind of terrorism." She said, "To us, this was just shocking."
Well, it is a form of terrorism. You know, think about this. The average person might want to think just for a moment about going to your dentist or your podiatrist or your internist or any other doctor that you might see and think of being stopped every step along the way by someone that wants to tell you your decision to go to that doctor is wrong, you don't know what you're doing something wrong, you're ashamed, what have you. I mean, you can't even begin to conceive of what it would be like to walk into a normal doctor's office having to run the gauntlet of people harassing you along the way in. And this is what patients at clinics have to face every single day. And it's not just at abortion clinics. There are people that protest and harass at family planning clinics where they don't even provide abortion. So that's why we always say this is not, it's about abortion, but it's not just about abortion. It's about women's ability to be able to control their bodies and their sex lives without interference from others. And why it's shocking, I think, to international observers is that despite the fact that there are indeed restrictive abortion laws in many countries in the world, certainly Poland is no leader in access to abortion care, even in those countries, you don't have this kind of, you know, violent threat of violence outside of clinics and doctors' offices all the time, or the intimidation of somebody having to approach and get through a large crowd. And it's not just like, let me get through this large crowd of people waiting for a ticket at the metro machine, but let me get through this large crowd of people who are haranguing me, you know, trying to dissuade me, grabbing at me, whatever they're doing. It's really intimidation, and they count on that as well, which I think then feeds the idea by other people out there that they should be able to take action because there's just such horrific things going on. So all of these lies, all of these things are both, again, they're violence against healthcare providers of the kind that you don't see except if you're talking about the Taliban, where they actually kill healthcare providers that provide care to women, or where, you know, you've got real people who are really being terrorized and harassed on a daily basis. It's just insane.
We have an email from Joe who says, do you have ideas for the most effective ways for citizens to get involved in defense of abortion rights? She writes, it seems to me it's time to go on the defensive on this issue rather than being constantly in, on the offensive rather than being constantly in a defensive apologetic posture. Jody, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not a provider, and I don't want to speak for providers. I do know that there are many things that individuals can do, both working through the National Abortion Federation, the National Network of Abortion Providers, the Abortion Care Network. Amanda will probably have much more effective and to-the-point things to say. The one thing I will say is that anyone that wants to take action needs first and foremost to be making sure their legislators know their opinion, making sure they are holding media in their area accountable, and perhaps offering their services of whatever kind is needed at a clinic or funding or what have you to abortion funds to ensure that people who need abortion care can get access to it in this environment.
Amanda, what would you add?
Giving me that question, because what I think about is that we operate out of communities. You know, we are not hard to reach places, and the reason why we exist is because our communities are asking for it. We work in areas where we know that patients and families need access to safe abortion care. So that's the entire reason why we exist in these communities. And, you know, this is the people in your neighborhood. You know, we are your abortion providers. We are the doctors in your neighborhood that look forward to working with community groups who want to see changes. We work very closely with a number of different community groups, including churches, where they want to see congregants and other members of their community come together to support us because they know that what we're doing is caring for the women in their lives. When we think statistically about the number of women who access abortion, we know that these are our sisters and our mothers, and they are our friends, and they are people that we care about, and we need to continue to support the places where safe abortion is happening, and that as members of the same community as these providers, you should be outraged when you see these nasty pictures outside of the office. You should be disgusted when you see these false claims being made on the front of your newspaper, and you should be upset when you find out that people are denied care. And so it's about legitimizing, supporting, and continuing to embrace healthcare workers in your neighborhood.
Joe also ends her email by saying contraception and abortion are not really controversial in this country. They're part of most women's lives. It's time to stop behaving as if they're shameful. And she's right, Jody. It's easier for us to think that the overwhelming majority of the population believes, you know, that abortion should be overturned, for example, Roe v. Wade. But Wall Street Journal came out with a poll 3 years ago that found the majority for the first time want abortion to be legal. We just don't hear that very often.
It's really a myth that we are an anti-choice country. What you find is that when you ask people really simplistic questions, binary questions, pro-choice, pro-life, et cetera, you get very different answers right. than when you ask more complex questions. And what do I mean by that? I mean, if someone asked me if I was pro-choice or pro-life, I would say both, because I'm pro-life for every living being on this planet, but I do believe that before a child comes into the world, it has to be wanted, and that a woman or a person who's pregnant has every right to determine whether they want to carry a pregnancy to term, because that is a lifelong commitment. So the first thing is to recognize that most people who even will answer pro-life, when you ask them more complex and deeper questions, they will say, look, you know, I don't think I would ever have an abortion, even if they have had an abortion, because many have, you know, but I don't want to decide for my neighbor or my sister or my aunt. So in states like Mississippi and South Dakota, where you get ballot initiatives that go actually to the people, ballot initiatives to restrict abortion are soundly defeated, even in the most conservative states, which is why one of the leading anti-choice organization leaders said, you know, we can't win this through the democratic process. They can't, because people may put themselves in a camp, but they don't want to be deciding for other people what health care they might need. The problem is that people also have been fed for too long this notion that we're okay as long as we have Roe v. Wade. And what the anti-choice community has realized is that you can do a lot under the guidance of both Roe v. Wade and another court case, Casey, to make sure that people don't have access to abortion care. And that's the fight we're fighting now.
Jody Jacobson is president and editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. Amanda Kifferly is director of patient advocacy for the Women's Centers Abortion Clinics in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jeff called in. He couldn't stay on the line. He says, why don't Planned Parenthood and other groups and clinics fight back by saying that these politicians are provoking the unstable? What are your thoughts on that, Amanda?
I think that's – thank you, Jeff, for raising that question. I mean, I think that's exactly what we're doing today, and I think it does take alternative streams of media like NPR that allow us the opportunities to talk about this. But, you know, that's what we're doing. And also, I just want to make it clear, you know, we're doctor's offices, you know? That's what I'm doing on a daily basis, is seeing to the needs of our patients, making sure that they're experiencing safe procedures, and advocating them on a daily basis so that they can access abortion timely, so that they can afford it. And I'm working in a healthcare environment, and at not all times can I also work as a person who's out defeating media stories. And I'm thankful for groups like Jody, who every day commit themselves to these excellent news stories that aren't being told in other places, allowing for the voice of providers and for women accessing services to be uplifted and distributed in great ways.
Well, thank you for calling in, Jeff. Let's go next to William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm curious as to the guest who discusses the media, her impression as to whether, since young people, I don't mean six-year-olds, I mean young adults, get their information. I've observed this working for Bernie Sanders' campaign, where the regular media don't seem to cover them at all, but the young people all know about them, that they're getting their information not from the media that, with respect to the choice issue, are spewing all kinds of falsehoods, but they're getting their information in other ways, off of the web and other sources, and I'm older, so I really don't get my information that way. But to what extent the fact that younger people are getting their information from less retrograde sources, more progressive sources, actually means that it isn't so important what the standard media are saying as time goes by?
All right. Thank you, William. Jody, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that's correct in many ways, and but I also have a little bit of a different, you know, I think that throughout history, we've gotten our major influencers have been our peers, right? Our families and our peers. That's pretty much communication throughout history. And in a sense, what you're saying and what's real is that now people through social media channels and otherwise are getting information through sharing through their peers, and they are doing it using different technologies than we might have had two centuries ago, but they're still doing the same thing. They're making peer networks and they're sharing information, and that's a really good and important thing. The question is what information is out there, how it gets shared, and what tips the scale in one way or the other. So how do you know what's a fact or not a fact? How do you know what viability means, for example? How do you know what an actual abortion looks like at 6 weeks or at 9 weeks or at 12 weeks? People have a very, I find that, you know, I think this is somewhat related to the decline and the politicization of sex education in this country. I truly believe that even a lot of lawmakers have no idea about the stages of pregnancy or how birth control works. So I think that it really is important that all media at all levels be held to a standard of fact-checking, because whether the peer networks and the media that you're listening to are Fox News, the New York Times, MSNBC, or smaller outlets that are pushing out, you know, sometimes better content, that those things be factually based no matter what. Because we have a real problem in this country, particularly when it comes to public health, you know, not just abortion, but public health generally, and really understanding what we're facing.
Mm. Really interesting and good. Thank you for calling in, William. Let's go next to Joyce in Berkeley. Hi, Joyce. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so excited to come into this conversation right at this moment. I'm just offering a something I saw in the Sunday Review, New York Times, Sunday, December 13th, article by Angie Drobnik-Holen, who is the editor of PolitiFact. And it's a wonderful article with this graph that's so demonstrative of rating. Starts at the top with Ben Carson, Trump, Ted Cruz, Dick Cheney down, of rating politicians on lies that they say, or how often they're lying and how often they're speaking they're truthfully. And then if you go to PolitiFact's website, you can look up on an issue. So, say I'm looking at politifact.com. I can select the topic of abortion, and you can go down and see what the various politicians are saying about that issue. It's a really wonderful tool.
Well, thank you for that, and we will look that up. We've used PolitiFact many times in the past, and that's great for our Friday show. So thank you for that, Joyce. I want to also talk about the consequences of laws that are being passed. And before we talk about what's happening in Texas, there's also a case in Tennessee. A woman has been charged with attempted murder for a failed self-induced abortion. She faces the possibility of a life sentence after she was indicted by a grand jury for attempting to kill her unborn child. Anna Yucca is her name. Before we talk about that, Amanda, since you work in centers in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, have laws been passed that are affecting your clinics?
Well, I think laws come up all the time, constantly. Obviously, in Pennsylvania, it was one of the first states in the nation to bring up the strictest abortion laws, requiring mandatory delays in a woman's care. Often, you know, it went so far as to consider asking for spousal permission to have an abortion. And we also see, of course, restrictions against the use of state funds to help women who qualify for funds to allow them to pay for the abortion. So, yeah, we see that across the nation. And I think what's so fascinating here, and which has been studied by a number of different research organizations, is that you see the number of laws being passed that hurt women, such as the case in Tennessee, where they want to regulate abortion out of existence. And what happens is what we're seeing in Tennessee, and certainly what we've seen in Texas, as indicated by the research numbers on the number of women who are attempting attempting to serve themselves. So instead of passing laws which would safeguard a woman, giving her safe access to medical experts in a particular field that where very few experts exist, what we're doing is pushing women out of doctors' offices, we're putting them onto the streets, we're abandoning women, we're leaving them alone, then we're taking it as so far as to criminalize them. So what is the sense in passing laws that take away a woman's right and not putting any money into protecting women against violence outside of the clinics from these counselors, the sidewalk counselors, taking, you know, the violence out of these conversations and instead over-regulating abortion to the point where women are dying and being criminalized for it.
Well, and what was your reaction when you heard about 31-year-old Anna Yaka in Tennessee? I mean, I've read about coat hangers before Roe v. Wade, and I had to read this article a couple of times because she was 24 weeks pregnant in September, and she allegedly attempted to induce a miscarriage using a coat hanger. I mean, it's shocking to read this. We don't know the backstory about why this happened. But what was your initial reaction when you read about this?
I mean, I'm a healthcare worker, so absolutely my heart broke. I also, you know, am very drawn to the work that I do because of my spiritual reasons that I feel like I'm doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing. So I, you know, thought about this, I prayed about it, I sent good, well-intentioned wishes to this woman, and my heart just completely sunk. It also broke when I saw that her face was plastered, you know, across the internet in conjunction with the headline of murder, and it just broke my heart that women were being talked about in that way. You know, my mother had two illegal abortions, so it was heartbreaking to think that we were seeing the word coat hanger again. It was heartbreaking that she was alone and that we abandoned her, and I think lawmakers need to realize that it was their law, not doctors' care, that put a woman in this position. And what a heartbreaking thing, and what a terrible thing to have on their conscience. And my heart just completely breaks for this woman and what she might be experiencing. And I hope very much that organizations out there who have access to her are able to provide her with the legal access that she needs and the health care that she deserves. And what a just sad, sad story.
So sad. I mean, she's been charged with attempted first-degree murder. She's being held on a bond of $200,000 in an adult detention center. She's going to appear in court for the first time on December 21st. I mean, Jody, you can restrict abortion, but if women want an abortion, they will do whatever it takes to get one. And in her case, she used a coat hanger. What were your thoughts when you first read about this?
Well, you know, I have the same thoughts as Amanda. I'm terrified for her. My heart is broken for her. I don't know her circumstances, certainly, but I don't need to know them because I'm not the judge of her life. I do know that, like Amanda, my mother had an abortion pre-Roe, and my mother had severe profuse bleeding and other complications as a result from that. I was a young kid, but still, you know, I knew about what was going on and I vaguely knew. I think it's, you know, it goes back to sort of public health. Having access to safe abortion care is a human rights issue and a public health issue. And when it comes to the moral aspect, that's up to the individual person. It's not for me to tell you what's morally correct in your life when you are deciding between whether or not you can provide a child with everything it needs throughout the course of its life. And I think that we're in this place now where publicly we have this sort of rhetoric around, you know, exalting motherhood and the child or what have you, but it's really profoundly a disrespect for parenthood and motherhood that we're looking at when we look at this argument against birth control and abortion, because it is also against birth control. Because when you are responsible, you know whether or not you can bring another person into the world, give them the love, the care, the feeding, et cetera, that they need all their lives, and the emotional sustenance. And if you can't, then you are responsibly acting by not bringing that child into the world. And what we're doing instead is we are imprisoning women like they do now in El Salvador or like they do in other countries of the South. And we're creating a country in which we will go back to the time where complications of abortion care begin to rise and increase maternal mortality rates.
That's just what's going to happen.
You wrote about what's happening in Texas, where the number of clinics have declined from 41 to 18. A new study came out from the Texas Policy Evaluation Project. It found between 100,000 and 240,000 Texas women have attempted self-induced abortions.
Yes. This was research conducted by the Texas Research Project, as you said, in conjunction with IBIS and other organizations. And this is really no surprise, because what you have in Texas is a huge state. We all know that, right? It's a very populous state. It's got a lot of income disparity. And so when you take out of the equation even the relatively small amount of access that women already had to abortion care in that state, when you remove half the clinics and you create distances of hours on end, and then on top of that, you make women go back and forth over the course of these, you know, created waiting periods, you create so many economic and other obstacles to care that women are going to take matters into their own hands, mm-hmm. as they have throughout history. So it's no surprise. And again, it's irresponsible from a public health and human rights perspective not to understand historically and what already happens throughout the world what's going to happen in Texas, because you could predict it, and it's happening.
Well, we will continue to follow this in 2016, especially as more laws are expected to pass, more anti-choice laws. Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, a daily publication providing analysis on these issues. Amanda Kifferly is director of patient advocacy for the Women's Centers, an affiliate of independent abortion centers in Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Jody and Amanda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rose. And thanks,
Amanda. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the economy and the Fed's decision to raise interest rates. We'll also talk about the $1.1 trillion budget deal, which includes $650 billion in tax cuts. The 20 wealthiest Americans own more wealth than the bottom half of the population. So how are the media reporting on rising inequality? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.